Hi, and welcome to the Finally Pregnant podcast, the podcast for those who are finally pregnant and parenting after infertility and loss. I'm your host, Kat Strawbridge, and after almost 7 years trying with multiple rounds of fertility treatment, which sadly included pregnancy loss, I became finally pregnant in 2018, and I'm now finally parenting my gorgeous daughter, Ren. This season of the Finally Pregnant podcast is sponsored by Melio. Melio offers blood tests before, during, and after pregnancy, from non-invasive prenatal tests to general health checks, helping you and your family take control of their health. All Melio tests are conducted by trained professionals at locations throughout the UK, with the results sent directly to your phone or laptop. Plus, every test comes with a personal health report from a Melio doctor. Melio. The more you know about your health, the more you can do about it, and the best source of knowledge is your blood. To find out more or to find a location near you, visit meliohealth.co.uk/health-pregnancy. There'll be a link in the show notes. We've also recorded a bonus episode of the Finally Pregnant podcast with Melio doctor Donna Fullerton, where we take a closer look at non-invasive prenatal testing. Check out that bonus episode in season 4 of the Finally Pregnant podcast, wherever you listen to your podcasts. Hello there. How are you doing? I am off the back of a beautiful day here in the UK, a little last hurrah of summer, which is wonderful. Although poor Ren is a bit under the weather, pardon the pun there, and that's not so good. She's mostly fine in herself, to be honest, but her eyes just over the last couple of days have become a bit gunky. I spoke to a pharmacist twice now, actually, once without her and once with her, and they don't look that bad. even though I can totally see it. So I'm cleaning them with Optrex regularly at the moment. But if they're not looking any better tomorrow, I am going to go back and see if we can get her something a bit stronger than Calpol, which I've been giving to her here and there as well, so that we can get her fixed up. Poor little thing. She just, yeah, like she's okay, but she just, her eyes just look a bit sore. Love her. Just want her to be better. I really do. But anyway, she'll be fine. She's, I'm actually looking at the baby monitor at the moment and she's fast asleep. So she's well, she's good. I am really looking forward to sharing today's podcast with you. I am chatting to the fabulous Lacey Turner, who you may know from EastEnders fame, where she plays the character Stacey Slater. Lacey went through two heartbreaking miscarriages before becoming finally pregnant with her daughter, to Dusty, who is now 2, and she then went on to have her son Trilby Fox just this year, in fact, following a lockdown pregnancy. We talk about all this and more during our chat. And one of the more things is the work of the incredible Tommies. Now, if you haven't heard of Tommies before, they are a charity organization committed to saving babies' lives. And they fund pioneering research and support families through every part of the pregnancy journey. And I know from my own Insta community alone, so many babies who are here because of the Tommy centres across the UK and their incredible medical teams, and also because of the research that they are so committed to. And it's because of this that I want to support them. And ahead of Baby Loss Awareness Week, which is next month in October, I am going to do this. How am I going to do it? Well, you may know that I run yoga and Pilates courses for those who are finally pregnant after infertility and loss. And for the October courses, so there's 3 courses, there's 2 yoga and 1 Pilates, and all the information is on my website at katstrawbridge.com. So for anyone who books on any of those courses, I'm going to donate 10% of the profits across all of them to Tommy's for the October courses. So like I say, head straight to the website katstrawbridge.com to book. There is a link in the show notes as always, or I post it regularly on my Instagram, so you can always head over there. If you wanted to buy it as a gift for someone, that is totally possible as well. So just drop me a line and we can get that organized. And like I say, I will be donating that money to Tommy's in October for Baby Loss Awareness Week and all of the incredible work that they do. If you have any questions at all about anything, then please don't hesitate to ask me. I'm always here, and there'll be a link to my email in the show notes too. Before I go on, can I ask you to subscribe, rate, and review the podcast wherever you listen? So just head straight to the podcast right now and do that. It means that it will reach more and more people who need to hear stories like Lacey's. And actually, Lacey talks about being inspired by someone else having shared their story. So it's so important that we reach as many people as possible so that they know that they're not alone. That's it from me for now. I really hope you enjoy the show. And if you fancy taking a quick selfie and tagging myself and Lacey, wherever you're listening, that would be amazing. I can't wait to see you. Take care. Bye-bye. In addition to this podcast, you'll find lots of other support for the wonderful Finally community over on my Instagram at Trying Years and at catstrawbridge.com. Examples of that support include the Finally Pregnant yoga and Pilates courses and a wonderful community called The Hangout. When you join The Hangout, which you can do whether you are pregnant or parenting, you'll receive a free meditation, access to 24/7 support, invitations to monthly speaker sessions and support groups, discounts, and lots more. Find out more about all of the support available to you at catstrawbridge.com. There's a link in the show notes. So today I'm really excited to be able to be chatting with Lacey Turner. Many of you will know her, but I just want to welcome you, Lacey, to the Finally Pregnant podcast and love to hear a little bit about who you are and I guess why you're here, kind of your fertility journey.
Thank you so much. I'm really excited. Thank you for having me. Obviously, you just said I'm Lacey, I'm an actress, and my journey was a difficult one to have my two lovely babies. So I'm here today to tell you about it and talk with you about it. And I'm sure lots of you have felt the same, feel the same, might feel the same in the future. So it's good to talk.
It really is. It really is. And especially, you know, I have to say, it's someone who has got a high profile, sharing and being open about having gone through pregnancy loss is so important. And I hope, as I find it, you know, kind of with a considerably lower profile, but basically anyone, find it quite liberating talking about it myself. So hopefully you find it healing for you, but you do help so many by sharing your story. So if we could start at the beginning, so you're with your partner, your husband, Matt, and you decided that you were going to try for a family. And that's a really exciting time, isn't it? Apparently.
Yes. Me and Matt have been together since we were 15, so half of our lives, pretty much. And I think growing up, you think, oh, I'll get married at 23, 24, I'll have a baby at 25, 26. So, yeah, so I think in our heads, that was just how it was supposed to go. And then we sort of quite quickly found out that it doesn't really go that way for everybody. Although I seem to be surrounded by people who can try once and then fall pregnant, which is rather frustrating. And although you're happy for them, you do think, how did you do that? But yes, so me and Matt were sort of not actively trying, but just sort of said, you know, let's just see what happens. And nothing happened for a good few years. We never fell pregnant. And I sort of thought that was a bit strange, really, considering everyone around me could fall pregnant so quickly. I just thought, this is odd. But then we sort of started making more of an effort to try, and we fell pregnant quite quickly, actually, after trying. And then at 7 weeks, we miscarried. And I just thought that was normal, I guess. I Googled it and I thought, oh, okay, well, that's what's meant to happen. But I felt completely and utterly crushed. I remember just laying on the bed in a ball, sobbing at 5 o'clock in the morning. Sorry to be gross, but just sitting in a big pool of blood. And the more I Googled it, the more it said, oh, it's very common, it's very common, it's very common. It didn't make me feel any better. There was nothing there really to help me to know where to go from here. So I just assumed that you just pick yourself up. And so I called the doctor and he said to go to A&E. So my text work, I said, I won't be coming in, I need to go to A&E. So I went to A&E and they said, oh, I'm really sorry, you've had a miscarriage. And they shut the paperwork and off we went. So then I said to Matt, you know, so I guess we sort of try again next month, I guess. But I just remember feeling so confused and lost and just sitting there with no answers. But I kept saying to myself, okay, it's common. So maybe it's just one of those things. So we tried again and we fell pregnant again. I think it was about 3 or 4 months later. And it was just, I mean, I was happy to fall pregnant, but I was really not excited. I didn't allow myself to be excited. We didn't discuss names or nurseries or anything like that. We just didn't talk about it. You know, I sort of said to Matt, just don't talk about it. You know, we'll just see what happens. And I got to the same point again, 7 weeks, and exactly the same thing happened again. And at that time round, actually, I sort of remember feeling like, oh, right, okay. Well, I expected it, I think. I just thought, oh, well, it's going to happen. So, and the first time round, you do think like, maybe I shouldn't have picked up that box, or maybe I shouldn't have told that person, and then maybe it wouldn't have happened. Or, you know, you try and find a reason as to why it happened, and actually there isn't necessarily one at that time. So, yes, we had the second miscarriage, and my mum had said to me, that's not right, you need to see someone. And I remember saying to her, you can't until 3 miscarriages. You can't see anyone. So lucky for us, we're in a position to be able to go privately. I mean, it's insane that you have to have 3 miscarriages before you see anybody, but hopefully that will change. So, yes, so we were lucky enough to take ourselves, and a friend of mine had a friend, and that was the only person that I'd known of to have a miscarriage. So I said to her, where did you go? What did you do? And she told me she had seen a doctor at St. Mary's, I think. So I went to St. Mary's, and Matt and I had lots of tests and this, that, and the other, and everything came back fine. On paper, we were perfectly able to have a baby. So that left us sort of feeling more confused, because on paper, we were perfectly able to have a baby. So why did this keep happening? And the thought of trying again was becoming a bit scary and a bit, I don't know if I can actually go through that again, because it's really difficult. Matt didn't know what to say to me. I didn't know what to say to Matt. And you can't talk to anybody, because you're not supposed to tell anybody that you're pregnant before 12 weeks. So although we were together, we were both so alone in our own little worlds and didn't have anybody to talk to or anywhere to turn. And I just remember Googling everything, and everything was American, and all this treatment was American. And so the doctor that I went to see had said to go and have a scan. So I took myself to the scan man, who is literally my favorite person in the world. He's like the David Attenborough of the womb. He is so, so lovely. I had a scan, and it turned out that I had a little bit left over just sort of sitting there. So they had said that I need to sort of let it go naturally. So every month, hope that it, you know, just sort of washes out, so to speak. And every month I would go back, and every month it was a fraction of a millimeter smaller. And that went on for like a good 4 or 5 months, which when you're trying for a baby feels like a lifetime. Every month feels like a year. And it got to the point where he'd said to me, Lacey, this is enough emotionally. I mean, it was smaller than a grain of rice. And yet it was stopping me from doing anything, really. It was stopping me from getting on with my life, because all I could think about every day was, is it still there? Has it gone? Is it going to go soon? Or so he had said, it's enough emotionally, I think that's enough now. So I had booked myself in to have it removed, which was so frustrating to go through this whole procedure, to be knocked out, to remove something that was so tiny, but that was completely stopping my life from moving forward. So that was that. And then I'd been told to give it another couple of months just to let everything settle down and then to start trying again. And in a way, I wanted to try again. I said to Matt, maybe we'll just get a dog. Maybe we'll just get a puppy and that's that. And we'll do all the other things that we want to do. We can't keep putting our life on hold. It was just too much. It felt like too much of a scary job at the time. So my periods are like clockwork. So we just went about our normal business. And then one day, as soon as it didn't come, I thought, I am pregnant. I know I am. So I'm literally like clockwork to the hour. We found out we were pregnant. And I just remember thinking, right, don't tell anybody, not telling anyone. Meanwhile, all my friends around me were falling pregnant and having babies. And, you know, as much as I never felt bitter towards them, I felt bitter towards strangers walking down the street with a pram or but for my friends I never felt like that, but I felt sad that I couldn't join them or that we wouldn't go to baby groups together. Or there's so many things that go through your head. But yes, so we fell pregnant, and then at 7 weeks I started bleeding, and it was on a Sunday. And I remember thinking, oh well, that there we go, that's that again. Just sort of sitting there crying, thinking, why is this happening to me? I don't have an answer. I want to know why. So I phoned the scan man on Monday morning and I just said, Bill, I need to come in. I think it's gone. So I went in on Monday morning and he did like an ultrasound thingy and he just had this massive scream. He just went, yes! I had been on Friday for a early scan and everything was fine. So on the Sunday, I thought, it's just strange how it's all of a sudden disappeared. But he had this great big, like, happy face, bless him. And he was like, there is a heartbeat there. He said, but your progesterone has gone down to nothing. So he said, we need to get you some progesterone. So he put me on progesterone. And that pretty much is the only reason that I have two lovely babies. Without that, I don't think I would actually be able to hold on to a pregnancy. So yeah, I mean, progesterone sort of saved me, really.
It's so difficult, isn't it? Like, we have unexplained infertility, so there's no reason, no one can tell us. And I sit here from a position of having been through, if only I could have some answers, if only I could have some answers, then we could fix it. Now, I know people who have answers, but it doesn't necessarily mean they can be fixed. But to have an answer that has worked, you know, and there are lots of people out there for sure, and this is what you're talking about, like, that is just so incredible, isn't it? And thank God that the research is there and that you had the team around you who were able to support you. And I know that Tommy's is doing so much work and you're working with Tommy's on that as well, and the whole conversation around progesterone. And yeah, it's just, it's so, so important. So you were on the medication at this point, you were pregnant. How was the rest of that pregnancy? How were you feeling?
I think I don't enjoy being pregnant. I just am full of anxiety until it's out, really, and it's in your arms. I just feel like anxious the whole time because people lose babies at any week in the pregnancy. So I don't know why there's a 12-week rule, because you can lose a baby at 20 weeks, 29 weeks, 30 weeks. People sadly have stillbirths. So I just spend my whole pregnancies being very, very anxious. But I remember the reason I started speaking openly about it is because I knew somebody on Instagram who had a long IVF journey, and she was talking about her journey and how she came to be pregnant. And it was that Sunday where I was sitting there and I thought I was having my third miscarriage, that I watched that video and it gave me so much hope. And I thought, do you know what? I'm lucky enough to have this platform. I need to be able to do something with it. And maybe I can give somebody else that hope that that girl gave me. So that was the reason that I started talking about it openly. Because I think if you can just help one person, then you've achieved something.
And you will have helped so, so many more than that by speaking out. And like I say, the work you do with Tommy's, and just, yeah, it's really incredible. You mentioned there that you don't really like being pregnant, and I totally understand that and all the anxiety that comes with that. But after having your first daughter, Dusty, you, I assume, had the conversation, shall we try for more perhaps, or perhaps you didn't.
Like, no.
Maybe, okay. But how did you feel in that second pregnancy? Because you were on the progesterone, that kind of worked first time. I'm sure that's not the right way of saying it, but you know what I mean.
Yes. We weren't trying for Trilby at all. I just sort of remember thinking, I think I'm pregnant, and Dusty's not even one. And I thought, I'm not checking until she's had her first birthday, because it's her birthday and it's her first one, and nothing is going to take that away from her. So her birthday was on the Sunday, and on the Monday I thought, I bet I'm going to check now. So I checked and I was pregnant, and I phoned Bill straight away and said, I need to come in, what do I do? And he said, let's just put you on the progesterone. And he says to me all the time, I could be giving you Smarties. There's no science to say that this works, but it works. And it most definitely works for me. Not everybody, but I remember after going on this morning to talk about it, my inbox was going crazy on Instagram, and there were hundreds of people who were asking about progesterone and where can you get it and, you know, what does it do? And then so many women went on to have successful pregnancies. So, you know, the science isn't there yet to prove that it works, but Tommy's is doing so much research, and others, into finding out more about progesterone and all the scientific bits and bobs that I'm not very good at remembering, but all those bits that go with it, to see if it can be more available to everybody.
Yeah, without question, absolutely. Like, there's so much research that needs to be done around fertility in general. IVF turned 40 a couple of years ago, and it's kind of like, it's amazing that we're 40 years into this research, and like, medical science is just mind-blowing. However, there are too many people who don't have answers. There are too many people like you, you know, you're using it, but that's not proven. So, you know, you mentioned that you were in a really lucky position that you could go privately and get checked out quickly, and so you have access to that medication. There are so many that haven't got access to it, and they can't, because it's not proven. So, you know, it's just this vicious cycle that we really need to talk about. So you took progesterone all through your pregnancy with Trilby as well, and so even though you hadn't been through any losses in between, did the impact of the previous losses, that they were still with you until he arrived?
Yes, most definitely. I spent my whole pregnancy with him exactly the same as with Dusty, just full of anxiety. My mum would say, oh, can I buy a baby bro? I was 30 weeks pregnant. No, you can't. My nan would say, oh, can I buy some mittens? No, you can't. No, nothing. Don't buy it. And it's a shame. It's sad, really, because I didn't allow anybody around me to be excited either. And I've been pregnant at the same time as my sister and my sister-in-law when I was pregnant with Dusty. And then when I was pregnant with Trilby, I was pregnant at the same time as my sister-in-law again. So, you know, it's odd because they can be happy and excited, and I don't feel like I can be like that. Well, I can be like that, but I choose not to, because I guess it's like a guard. I'm protecting myself. I'm sort of preparing myself for the worst, so that if it does happen, the blow isn't so hard, which is so sad.
It's really, really sad. And I know that I tried to, you know, talk to myself during my pregnancy and say that if I'm going to fall, I'm going to fall hard either way. So if I can enjoy bits, then that's what I want to do. And I'd like, one of the things that I've spoken about before is we were expecting identical twins, and we knew that because we only had one embryo transferred. And I had the most amazing moment telling my family that it was twins, because it was like, we were shell-shocked that it was. It was a real shocker that, you know, we were like, oh my gosh, how are we going to manage two at the same time? And we kept that to ourselves for a couple of weeks. But when I did share with my family at the end of one of my sister's baby showers, actually, it was such an exciting moment. And it's a moment that I still treasure now, and I'm so glad that I was able to let myself enjoy that, even though we did lose one of our twins. And obviously there was a lot of heartbreak around that, and it's something that still lives with me today. But we have to do what's right for us, don't we? And if keeping your guard up all the way through is right, then there's no question.
Yeah, it's just a natural reaction, I guess, for some people. And others, people are better at talking to themselves, you know, and having a word with themselves than others. But yeah, I guess everyone's different. It doesn't make it any easier for anybody.
Definitely not. Definitely not. And one of the things that was, in addition, difficult for you is your pregnancy. A lot of it was during lockdown. How was that?
Yes. Well, in some ways, it was actually really lovely to be pregnant during lockdown and have a baby during lockdown, because you didn't have to see everyone. You didn't have to put on that big smile. And, you know, you didn't have, you know, people asking all the questions that they ask. So in some ways, it was actually really lovely. And I remember after having Trilby, I felt really, I don't know why, but really protective over him, more so than I did Dusty. I didn't want anyone to touch him. I didn't want anyone to hold him. So it was actually really lovely to not have like loads of people come round, and, you know, you have everyone comes to see the baby, and it was nice. You couldn't let anyone in, and it wasn't your fault. So you didn't have to be that person after giving birth. I just came home and it was just me, Matt and Dusty and my mum and my sister, because they're in my bubble. And it was great. It was just lovely to have no one there. As it went on and he got bigger and older, and it got harder, especially with Dusty, it got harder because she sort of was getting older and she got to the point where she didn't have any friends. She doesn't know what sharing is, because she hasn't been with anyone for so long. So it got to the point where you think, ah, we need to get out now. But no, it was actually, I know a lot of people found it really tough, but I think I found it quite comforting, really, because I sort of lived my life publicly. So it was quite nice to be able to shut my door and no one needed to come in or be a part of it.
I can totally understand that. And yeah, like there was something I found very quiet and homely and peaceful. And I know that obviously lockdown and COVID and everything has brought so much heartache and so much kind of trauma to so many people. But on a kind of just individual level for our family, there was something really nice about all being together. And certainly, and I've heard other people talk about this with my husband, being at home rather than having to commute to work, the time that he's been able to spend with Ren has been invaluable, actually, for their relationship. It's been, you know, we have to look for silver linings, and that is definitely a silver lining through all of this. How is it having two? You know, like people say, well, your heart gets bigger, and it's, you know, there's a lot of people that will be listening who are thinking about having their second, thinking about trying for their second. I, at the time of recording this, am just about to have an embryo transferred in a few weeks' time. So I guess I'll know the answer to this by the time this comes out, which is a bit frightening. Oh, thinking about it like that. Oh. But how is it having two?
Do you know what? It's lovely. It's crazy. It's manic. They both cry at the same time. They never go to sleep at the same time, but it is so lovely. I mean, I've got quite a small age gap, which I wouldn't do again necessarily, but it will be lovely as they get older. It's the small age gap is quite tough because Dusty's still a baby. She still needs me for so many things, like getting off a chair, you know, and when you've only got your legs free, because Trilby's having a bottle, you sort of think, oh, she's stuck on the chair. She'll have to wait there. Or, you know, one of them always ends up having to sacrifice something. But it is so lovely. It is really lovely, but crazy. But I like it like that.
Yeah. Absolutely, absolutely. Wouldn't have it any other way. And Matt is, I think, having watched a Loose Women video a while ago, Matt is a stay-at-home dad, is that right? So, and you're on maternity leave, so are you both at home at the moment?
Yes. Yeah, we're both at home. Matt is a barber, so he was, since barbers were able to open again, he's been doing a bit of barbering. But yes, he pretty much stays at home. And when I go back to work, he'll be at home unless I'm home, and then he'll be able to go out. But I have a really, really good support system. I'm very lucky. My mum is always there. My sister's there. My 82-year-old nan, she has Trilby every Thursday morning. She absolutely loves it. I am very, very lucky that I am surrounded by babysitters. So yeah, we are very lucky.
That's amazing. I love that your 82-year-old nan looks after Trilby. That's incredible.
He's amazing. I think it's really good for her, actually, because she lives alone and it's nice for her to have someone to talk to, even though he doesn't talk. But she really enjoys it. And I think it makes her feel like she's a part of it and, you know, she's not left out. And he loves it because it's really hard when you've got two, because you spend a lot of time feeling guilty that the second one didn't get what the first one got. I remember crying, saying to my mum, you know, he's never going to get a kitchen. He's never going to get a car. He's never going to, because he just has Dusty's old stuff. But yeah, so it's nice for him to sort of have that one-on-one time with someone who would, my nan would just sit there all day and just hold him. She won't put him down, which is lovely for him.
Absolutely. Oh, no, that sounds really, really lovely. And I like that kind of harks back to, oh gosh, I don't know, many years ago, there being some programs on the telly about research behind like OAPs, kind of older people and children being together. I think they sent a load of nursery age children into an old people's home or something.
Yes.
To see what happened. And the impact was just brilliant on everyone, I think.
It's amazing. I do think the mix of the two ages is just genius. It definitely brings something out in older people. And they have no fear and no filters, little ones, do they? So it's perfect.
And do you find that you make time? Because I think that's a really interesting thing and something that people will need to perhaps think about if they are looking to have two or if they've got two. Do you find that you try to make time to have one-on-one time both with Dusty and with Trilby? Like, but it must be so hard. And like you say, I'm sure there's a lot of guilt around that, but there must also be something nice when that is possible too.
Yeah, it's lovely. You do try really hard. It's so hard because there's not enough hours in the day, but at the same time, there's too many. You know, come 8 o'clock, you're like, oh, please go to sleep. So, both of you. But no, there's little snippets that you get in the day. Like I used to like doing the night feed because it's just you and the baby and it's quiet. Have that moment to sort of examine every little bit of their face. But yeah, it is hard to try and make it happen, especially if you're a working mum, because you have even less time at home. But somehow you do, you just make it work.
And with you and Matt, you know, without prying or asking you to speak for him, like, how have you worked together having to? Like, it was my husband's birthday yesterday and I took him out for dinner. And it's the first time we've been out for dinner just like that, you know, with a babysitter at home and just had some us time. And he was saying today how, like, coming out of lockdown and just being able to do that and having time with Ren and, but, you know, working on our relationship, because it's hard with one little one, never mind two or more, however many people have got. What's any words of wisdom around that?
I mean, me and Matt went out for the first time in I don't know how long, over a year, about 2 weeks ago, and we were driving up to town and we were like, this is so weird. We're in the car with, I can't hear Peppa Pig. I can't see anyone in the mirror. I was like, this is just so strange that we're in the car on our own and we're listening to our music. And it was, we felt like teenagers again. But I think when you just get those moments and you get those opportunities, you've got to take them. Even though you're tired, even though you can't bother to get dressed up or put makeup on, just put a bit of Vaseline on your lips and out the door you go, you'll be fine.
Yeah, and it's about making that time, isn't it? But you're right, you're absolutely, and you know what, you've hit the nail on the head. I was, what time was it? Just before five, I was like, shall I put my makeup on now? We didn't go out till 7:30, but I was like, before I picked Ren up from nursery, I thought, if I just do it now, honestly, they're glamour.
I don't even put makeup on. I thought, I think I literally just put a bit of the pink Vaseline on my lips. And put a dress on and it looked like I'd made an effort. But we booked a table. They only had 7 and we were both like, oh, that's so late. My mum was like, 7 is late.
Yeah.
I was like, yeah, I'd like to be in bed by 9.
Exactly. You can be home in bed by 9:30. Yeah, exactly. But it's got to be done. It's important. Definitely.
We made it.
Can I just take you back to something that I have read, and actually more so because it is in the news at the moment generally about different companies, about pregnancy loss policies, because it's really important and it is getting more and more coverage now, which is so important. And yes. Channel 4, Monzo Bank, and I think John Lewis has also just come out with a pregnancy loss policy. How do you feel, and in your own experience, in the experiences, if you've spoken to other people around you who work in different industries or companies, or, you know, like, what are your thoughts around that? Because I think that you went to work the day after your miscarriage, did you?
Yes, I did, actually. I just went straight back to work. I think it depends on the person. I think there should be an option. I think it should be an option to be able to come in when you're ready to come back. For me, I'd rather get up and go to work. It was like a distraction more than anything. But I don't think people, well, it's hard unless you've been through it. You don't understand what it's like to grieve something that some people say wasn't even really a thing. But everybody is different. And, you know, I remember sort of being really confused as to why I feel so sad about something that was so small and wasn't even here yet, that I didn't even know. But I do think that people should have the option to return to work when they feel right, when it's right for them.
Yeah, I completely agree. And it's just a really amazing step forward, I think, in the recognition of pregnancy loss. And you mentioned a couple of times, you know, that we keep quiet, don't we, for those 12 weeks a lot of time. Well, that's the traditional, apparently, way to do it. Yeah. And that's the time often we need the most support because of early miscarriage, because of pregnancy sickness, because of, you know, it's a really hard time to hide it, if, you know, for want of a better word. But the fact that we are talking about it more, and this, like I say, it's a really good step forward. Ultimately, I completely agree. You know, like, sometimes you just want to get back to work because you want the distraction. And whether it's the 3 days that I know New Zealand announced a while ago, or the 10 days that I've read recently, I'm not sure which bank that was. Oh, actually, I think that was a law firm offered 10 days. You know, there isn't a time limit on grief. So it's great that they exist and it is helping the conversation, absolutely. But we all need different things, don't we?
And yeah.
So I guess the conversation perhaps is one of the most important parts of that. But the leave for some people will be intrinsic to that grief and that healing process.
Yeah.
Brilliant. Well, thank you so much, Lacey. Honestly, it's been an absolute honour chatting to you.
Oh, thank you for having me.
I really appreciate it. And just because Dusty, is she almost two now? She's coming up to two?
She's two in a few weeks, 3 or 4 weeks. Yeah.
Oh, it's a really happy. Honestly, it's crazy, isn't it? And I know. And people tell you that, and you're kind of like, yeah, okay. And then you kind of go, oh my God, they were right. It goes so fast.
Yeah, it really does.
what did I hear? I've heard this a few times, I think, but how the nights are long but the years are short.
Yes.
And that's all too true. But from my experience, like, and lots of people said to me, the first birthday is often about the parents and like, well done, you did it, you got them through the first year and you all survived. The second birthday, from Ren's point of view, I guess coming out of lockdown and everything, just having everyone around and really celebrating her, and I feel like she enjoyed her second birthday party, which is amazing.
I feel like they understand it more now, don't they? Which I'm really excited for.
Oh, you've got lots of
tiny humans.
They are. They are, definitely. Are you? Have you picked a theme? Are you going to go with a theme?
No, you know, I'm terrible. I haven't really done anything, but I'm sure I'll pull something together at the lot. I'm a very last minute person. I'm not very organised. I used to be, but I'm not anymore.
It's hard organizing, you know, four people in a household. That's enough. The party will happen, definitely. No, you'll have a fabulous time. And just thank you so much for sharing. I really, really appreciate it.
Thank you so much. I had a lovely chat.
Good. Take care. Bye-bye.